Good morning, my name's Sharon Crane. I'm an alcoholic. And I think I wrote it a little bit longer, but that's okay. The introduction. No, I'm teasing, and I was watching Amanda there fanning herself, so that's how she gets her hair. She fans. I got kicked out of two bars in my drinking. One was the Bastille in the French Quarter, where it was a local bar, and my hair got caught in the ceiling fan. And I walked in to pay my tab, and they said, out, and I went, I have money. And he said, look at the fan, look what you did last night. I said, I did. Oh, I had a big gap out of my hair, and my head was sore. But he said, he didn't care you broke the fan, you broke all the good whiskey. You didn't break the well whiskey. I fell and fell into the Smirnoff, you know, and all of the Cuvassier and all of the good stuff. So the owner was mad. So I got, you know, 86 from there, and a place also in Hollywood called Filthy McNasty's that I don't remember what happened. It's hard to get 86 from Filthy McNasty's. And thank you, Miriam, this morning for, I guess, getting us moving. I almost brought up my, I thought, where's my spoons? I was going to play the spoons. I played the spoons with the organic farm I got kicked out of because I'm a drinker, and all they did was sip organic wine and smoke stuff. And I was the drinker, and they said, oh, just be quiet. Sit over there. Play some spoons, you know, during all the hootenannies. And so it's always a walk down memory lane. And thank you, Lee, for having this. Thank you, all of the committee. Thank you, Mary Emma. Yeah, we've shared a lot over the years and know a lot about each other's lives. And it reminds me of when you go out from here, as she said, we're on the broad highway. When you go out from here and you take it home, just remember it's wheels down. We're going to fly high this weekend. So you got to land the plane, wheels down, and go back to your home and the people about you and share what you found and share the light that's being given this weekend. I love nature. I grew up in Iowa, first resentment, but but I love nature, and there's a aspen grove you can see from space. And because of the root system, they're all connected with each other. This huge root system in the mountains of Colorado you can see from space. And that's us. We're all connected here in the big root system, firmly planted. And the thing about the aspens is they grow tall and they're close together. So on the floor where the soil is, there's not a lot of light. And the little ones that are growing need some light. So the big ones that are tall, the ones that have been around a while, bring the sun down the roots, down their bark, down the core of the trunk, and they give it to whoever needs it, the light. The little ones, the ones that are in the forest trying to grow, the ones that need the light. And then the big ones are so tall, they've kind of depleted all of the, you know, all of the soil nutrients that they need to keep growing. And the little ones are new and fresh, and they bring that nutrient to the big ones. So we're connected. And they say that if you're new with us, newer with us, that 10 people's lives are better because you're sitting with us today. That there's a mother that will sleep at night, a dad that doesn't have to, or a husband lock up the money and the keys to the car and the credit cards. And maybe somebody will go to a movie tonight and not be interrupted by a bail bondsman, you know. So they say 10 people's lives get better. So it's not about you. Sorry to tell you. I know if you're new, it's like about me. It's all about me. But and then the other speakers here I love very much. I just met Deborah. I haven't met the Al-Anon. And Beth, I know you well. Tammy, I know you very well. I sit by you every Wednesday night, almost two seats away. Carla, many, many years knowing you. And last night, Amy and I know Teresa very well. She's sparked me up a lot over the years, and I'm hoping I'm not missing anyone because I want to do my propers. My mother said, always do your propers, Sharon. I think that's a Southern thing. She's not even Southern, so she had a lot of manners, my mother. But, yeah, I think I got everyone. So thank you. Thank you for having me. I've got three girls in this room. I sponsor Oklahoma, Colorado, and Miami. I guess it's a different state, Miami. We're not from Florida, we're from Miami. And people I love and grandbabies and many people I know, and that you've touched my heart along the way of my journey. And I'm here to talk about 4 and 5, and I've had three sponsors in my 43 years and, what is it, 8 months, and no, I think it's 9 months, and gosh, 10 days. So August 20th is my sobriety date. If I live that long, I'll have 44 years, and that's a nod to God. That's a nod to God. And I've done nothing alone. I've always been a seeker, and just from a little age, I've always been a seeker. And so I asked God to help me seek and do as well, because I'm a more girl. I like tequila. I like running with people I didn't have to remember their names. I'm seeking. And when I first discovered King Alcohol, it was talked about how much alcohol takes from you, but I gave it all. I gave it all to my King. And, it took a lot from me. And King Alcohol, though, filled me up with spirit. The spirit of alcohol, as Carl Jung talks about, filled me up with the spirit of God. And as soon as I found alcohol, I didn't need God anymore. And we had a separation that I didn't really care about until I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to just let you know, my mother sleeps at night because I'm with you. And now she sleeps with the angels. But I want to just read, just to get set for me, some of the highlights that I love. That my book, this is one of my crazy books that I love. I mark the heck out of it. I tag it. It's actually, the spine is broken on page 69. 68 and 69, more about sex. Broken. So, yeah. So, but I love how it starts. It goes, next week after step 3, we launched. We're going to be launched with this step. You know, I love being launched. I don't care if it's sitting in the room listening to you. I don't care if it's like, you know, a great meditation. Yeah, I don't care if it's, you know, bungee jumping in New Zealand. I'm going to be launched. That's kind of my thing. I'm going to be older this August, but we're not telling. And I'm going to go water skiing. And I'm going to be launched as I get up on those skis. Every summer I'm going to water ski until I can't do it anymore. So I want to be here. I want to be here with you. So I've had three sponsors, and I've done an in-depth inventory with each one of those sponsors. One for 1 to 5, one for 5 to 10, one from 10 until now. And I'm sure as another sponsor will come down the pike, because we all get older, my sponsor's getting older, that, you know, I'll find another sponsor, and I'll do an in-depth inventory as to where I am, because life continues. So after we're launched out on a course of vigorous action, just like our little dance this morning, a little bit more, it talks about it's a vital and crucial step, strenuous effort, to face and be rid of things in ourselves that had been blocking us. You know, we look at causes and conditions. Step 4, it's fact-finding and fact-facing, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. I had some regret. Resentment is the number one offender. From its stem, all forms of spiritual illness. All. And we must be definite in our column work. We must be definite. When I got sober in 75, we were reading the 12 and 12 a lot around here. So I guess you can read the 12 and 12 and stay sober. And then, you know, I read 3 pages of the big book every night when I could read again. I came to you with my jaw broken in 3 places, my nose broken, huge concussion, drug around by my hair in the cement, lots of bruises and scrapes. And if my bones wouldn't have been so good, I would have had broken cheekbones. I couldn't touch them for 6 months. And I was rolled off the side of a road in the desert. I came to you a mumbled, jumbled mess. And I had absolutely no idea how spiritually sick I was. So, it is very, very true that Chuck C. had 5 questions that he passed down, and it basically was the columns in 5 questions. So that was my first inventory, was answering those 5 questions. And we got down to what it talks about, you know, what we have to make, you know, how can I want to, but with the alcoholic whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, it says there. And they found that it's fatal if we don't. And the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill us. It's like, oh gosh, these words. We look for our own mistakes. We're willing to set these matters straight. Fear is like stealing. Fear is something that I live with as I grow. Always the fear has a loud voice as I'm growing. And it's been loud again lately, so. But I work through so much of it. She keeps showing up. She just keeps showing up, fear. It was a couple of years ago when fear was lying in bed with me as I woke up the day after my husband's memorial. And it was a beautiful memorial. If it was a beautiful death, it was a beautiful death. I don't know how to talk about that, other than it had moments that you can't explain as I held him for his last breath. His last breath was at 8:20. That's my sobriety date. I was like, well, thank you, sweetie. But she woke me up after the memorial, wide awake, like 5 in the morning. You shouldn't have done this. Why did you do that? Why didn't this change? You needed to have more of that. That was in the wrong spot. You didn't talk to those people. Oh, my God. You know, I'm broken open to every piece of broken heart that I can be broken open to. And she's like there, making me afraid to get out of bed, making me afraid I'm not enough again, making me afraid I can't handle this. And so I had a moment there. I just thought, wow, she's been with me a long time. A long time, my evil twin, I call her. So I decided to take her for a ride. So I made a tuna fish sandwich. I cut it corner to corner, because that's the way she likes it. I put it in a paper bag. I didn't write anything on it because I didn't want her to find her way home, you know. So I taped it. I thought I had stapled it, but I think I taped the top shut. And I walked out the door and I said, come on. And I opened the car door. I put the sandwich on the seat. I said, get in. Closed the car door. I went around, started my car and drove. And I drove her somewhere. I was living by the airport then, and I drove her somewhere by the beach, Playa del Rey, I think. But I saw a bus stop that looked perfect for her. And I opened the door, and I took the tuna out, and I said, come on, let's come sit down. And I thanked her for being in my life all those years, because she helped me survive. She helped me survive in situations that, you know, I hitchhiked north, south, east, west. I got out of a lot of situations. And she helped me survive to get to you. She was a big part of that survivor, that fear that motivated me to move through it, whatever it is. Just keep going. Don't listen. Don't look. Keep going. Drink your booze and keep going. And now she's in my life trying to take away my joy, my comfort with God, my growth. Because when I grow, then she has to get quiet. She gets really loud and then she gets quiet. So I put her on the bench, I thanked her, I got in my car and I drove away. She was gone for a little while, but she found her way home, darn it. So now I make peanut butter. I don't want somebody, if she leaves the sandwich, to get sick on mayonnaise. So she's about ready for another trip, I think. And then, you know, it's got some musts in here, which I love. Whatever our ideal turns out to be on my broken page here, 69, broken spine of my book, whatever our ideal turns out to be, we must be willing to grow toward it. And then it talks about in meditation. And I like that because these whole two steps just lead you from and to, as was being spoken about last night. From and to. But we let God be the final judge. We avoid hysterical thinking or advice. And then it talks about motives. Here we go. Motives. I have to watch my motives. I have to be clear with my motives. For me, I have to have that. Because if I don't have clear motives in my life, it blocks me. It stops me in my tracks. I'm not happy. I'm having a dark night of the soul experience. It's powerful stuff. So I wear my Sandy band, which is Sandy B, be the least disturbed person in the room. I snap it a lot. I've broken a few, but be the least disturbed person in the room, in the airport, in your car, in a gathering, you know, at a job, on the phone. I remember once I answered the phone going, "What?" What? And it was before caller ID. I thought my son was getting some obscene phone calls from girls or something. I just went, "What?" And the guy went, "Oh, I don't know. My name is Fred from New Jersey. I was going to ask you to speak, but never mind," and hung up. So I've learned how to answer the phone better because I'm thinking, "Oh, my God, I don't even have caller ID. I can't call this guy back." Oh, what a lesson I learned. And then he called me a month later. He said, "My sponsor said to give you another chance." New Jersey in January, I won't even wear a coat. It's okay. I'll come. I'll be humbled. You know, my friend Don Newcomb wrote in my book, he's gone too, sweetheart of a man. He said, "Humility is what is left after the pain has been removed from humiliation." Oh, yeah. And I've learned to eat crow when it's warm. It tastes a little better than letting it get cold. Because if I'm on this path, I can't live blocked. I am awakened, and I can't live blocked. And as you know, being awakened is joyous and painful sometimes. And that's where my willingness and my humility reside. That's where it resides, in seeking and trying to do God's will on a daily basis and get myself out of the way. So it says it's a good beginning. And I remember, what? This is just a good beginning? What? You know? We have to learn tolerance, patience, goodwill. Resentments are fatal. And then it goes into the into action. And I love having persevered with the rest of the program. That's one of my favorite words. My husband gave me the word of perseverance. You know, I never, ever give up on something that is meant to be. If I'm out of the way, I know I'm supposed to be there doing it. I know I'm supposed to be here doing this today. I've never done a workshop on 4 and 5. I've done it all the way through, but not just specifically. So this is a growth for me, too. I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the whole weekend. I'm a little part, and I'm a seed in the part of all of this. I'm down in the soil. I'm needing the nutrients. So it says we must be entirely honest with somebody if we expect to live long and happily in this world. Oh, my God. Really? I've got to be honest with one person. And I was really honest with Janet, my first sponsor. And I couldn't write it, and I couldn't write it, and I couldn't write. And it seemed like at 1 year of sobriety, everybody got the secret to life when they did their inventory with their sponsor, and you got a birthday cake with one candle. Otherwise, it seemed to me they wouldn't let me take a cake. Nobody said that, but I was under that kind of pressure with myself, because I need pressure sometimes. I need pressure. I keep waiting for the diamond to come, but it's just pressure. But And I was prepared for a long talk with her, but I finally did my inventory, wrote it, finished it a week before my 1 year birthday. And I got to tell you, my motives weren't good, but my action was. There was a girl that came in 8 days after me named Pat Y. And Pat Y came in 8 days after me, stole my thunder. I have this broke for the first 3 months. I couldn't talk. I was so jumbled. I couldn't even read. I didn't hardly say my name. I didn't know where I was. I had been living homeless in Hollywood. There was a place on Sweetser Avenue that I saw, and the door is still there, and it's still unlocked. I was unemployable. Gallbladder was out. I had pancreatitis. I had liver spots on my face, and my mother didn't know where I was. I was on my way to Hawaii, and I landed in Los Angeles. And they have hours. I was from New Orleans, a 24-hour town. Literally had to pull me off the bar stool at Barney's Beanery because they were closing. I was, "No, I'm not done. So there I am. There I am with you, with that, not speaking, not doing anything. And Pat Yo comes in all pretty and crying. I got my broken jaw, I'm still beat up. My face was a mess. It was bruised. My eyeballs were red from all of the... And I was like... Ugh. "Oh, you're new, are you?" they'd say. It's a good thing I couldn't talk, because it was like, "Yeah, so what's it to you?" You know? I had lost all my fight, blessedly. But then I had 8 days of attention. And then Pat comes along. So it seemed like I got the second string of people to talk to me. You know, it's like the first string was all around Pat. All the old timers, I wanted to be like the women and all of the ones that had pretty clothes and dressed pretty and seemed nice until they betrayed me. Nothing big. But, you know, oh, Pat did her third step. It's so wonderful. And Pat's working on her inventory. And then it was Pat's in amends. What? She has 8 days less than me. She has amends. I better hurry up. So I finally, after breaking loose of my fear, it just flowed. And I was ready that night. I did my fifth step with my sponsor on the beach all night in Venice. Wasn't a safe place then. And then we're on the beach on a blanket, and I see this cop car pull up, you know, in the parking lot. And I go, oh, crap, what, did she turn me in? And two policemen get out with their flashlights, and they start walking over to us. And I'm just holding my inventory like this. And they said, are you girls all right? Yeah, we're okay. I've just given her daggers, like, what's going on here? And, you know, they left, and they just came by. That we were there all night, and they'd sit in the car and make sure we were okay. And she was prepared for a long talk. But that night that I went to the meeting thinking, okay, Pat's going to give me that little blue lip smile like I've done all my steps, and I know that you are not even done with your inventory yet. And I was ready for that. I was ready for her to look at me like she seemed to do in Chapter 5 all the time. Just look for me in the room, you know. Look at me. I'm more well than you. Is it quality or quantity those 8 days? And I was all ready to give her my one-fingered peace sign. But she smiled at me with a big, bright smile, and it just washed over me. And I did my fifth step, and then I took my cake. And then my sponsor leaned over to give me the secret of life, like they seemed to do it 1 year. They all whispered in their ear, and they would and go, they take their cake, and it's like, I'm ready. I'm ready for the secret of life. And I blew out the candle, and she leaned in my ear and said, good blow job. That was Janet. It says we began to feel the nearness of our Creator. Now we began to have another, it says, spiritual experience. So, and the drink problem has disappeared, and the broad highway, and returning home. I've listened to a lot of fifth steps, and if I say, okay, is your book on a shelf? They say, no. I said, go find a shelf. Put it on the shelf. Sit there for a minute. Then take it down. Carefully reading the first five proposals. We ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man. And we know God better, and we thank him from the bottom of our heart. And after that fifth step, I took my sponsor home. The sun was coming up, and for the first time in my life, I had an innocent thought come through my head. I looked up in the sky. It was morning, which I saw a lot of mornings. Ouch, let's go find somewhere dark in the past. And that was a kind of, my husband used to call it sky blue pink in the sky. And I looked up there, and I went, oh, angels would live there. What? Who said that? Angels would live there. It was not my words. And I had a moment there of just feeling close to my Creator. So, yes, this is a life and death errand it talks about. And I am so privileged to have been able to do an in-depth with every sponsor. And my second inventory was with a woman named Ginny. After my first one, we made our list. Boy, it used to be in the old days you burned yours, you know, but you better make your list first, you know. It's like, oh, God, we burned it. Okay, we made a list, but then we burned it. It was okay. So I didn't really have to think too much about it because she pointed a lot of things out for me. And a lot of them was, going to find the guy in New York City in Central Park, guy with the flute. Do you girls have anybody on your list like that? Only redhead I ever slept with, you know? I mean, you know what I mean? Just things on your list, and she took what you went, scratch, 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 scratch. And the first one was going home to Iowa to my parents and my dad and four siblings. Nobody alcoholic but me. I'm the middle of three girls. And then Mensa, older sister, the alcoholic. And then Nurse Sally wanted a horse, wanted to move to Alaska, be a nurse, 4 years old. That's what she said she wanted to do. That's what she did. What? And then my brother has a doctorate. So there's me. And they, my father and I hadn't sat down at a breakfast table maybe since I was about 19 together, alone together, because he would say, what's going on? Or sometimes I got, what's wrong with you? And that's why I love it that it talks about it's our wrongs. The I'm sorrys don't matter anymore. It's our wrongs. I had a lot of things I was wrong. And that was a big chunk to swallow. Because I'm a victim. And in those days in the hospital before I got sober, that was July 27th that happened. I got sober August 20th. I laid in there for 2 weeks and I had a detective. I was a victim of violent crime. I was a documented victim. And that's what I was shooting for. But Dad would say things to me like, what's going on? And I would tell my father things that fathers didn't need to know about their child, especially their little girls. And he would set his jaw and get up and leave. I got seated with the children, the young ones, at the card table at Grandma's that Thanksgiving. I made the big table, but now I'm back on the porch with the kids. And I didn't belong to my family anymore from that point on. And on all my travels and all the things, all my Chapter 3, I had to slide across the bar my dignity. I had to slide across the bar my God-given talents. I had to slide across the bar the love of my family. I had to slide across the bar all my hopes and dreams. And I did it willingly when King Alcohol asked. Willingly. And I was a victim when I came. But my dad, I went home, we wrote something. My mother and I were so bonded. Always. She always wanted to know where I was. And when I joined the carnival, that was like, what? You did what? I thought you were at that organic farm with 85 acres of land, going to marry that guy. No, Mother. I was speaking once. She heard me speak twice, and I said, I forgot she didn't know I grew crop. At Maui Waui seed, I grew crop. And I said something about it, and I went, oh, you didn't know about that, did you? But my mother said, I said, Mom, I don't want to say anything that hurts you. And she said, no, there's just some surprises. Yeah. But my dad was a different story. My dad had to come and bail me out, or try to bail me out, because they kept me in the Bogalusa, Louisiana jail, because even the carnival didn't want me. They pointed the finger. They knew I had stuff in my room, and I ended up locked up in Southern jail, where you didn't shower alone, you didn't sleep alone. But I had cut myself all over with a piece of glass because I was having DTs, and they left me alone. She's crazy. She's crazy. So my dad came to see me in that situation, hire a bail bondsman, hire a lawyer. There was a judge in the room. They took my dad's money. There was a lot that was pain. I couldn't talk to him. Always passed the phone to Mom. My mom sent, because she always wanted to know if I was okay, and there were times she didn't hear from me, she always sent me a Valentine present. And so this sweater came to the bar I was working in about 2 weeks after Valentine's Day. She sent it to the other bar I was working in because she knew I'd call home. I'm not hurting anyone but me, so leave me alone. Selfish, self-centered victim talk. And my dad, I broke his heart over and over again. And my mother said once when I came home to rest, she said, you can stay here, but please stay out of your father's way because you break his heart. And on the day I called Alcoholics Anonymous, my mother was on the phone because I was staying with this guy above a liquor store. in West Los Angeles. And he knew I had nowhere to go, and I had a detective. And I had to go back to court. I had to go back to doctors. It was a two-hour ride. I didn't have a car. He was kind to me. And on August 20th, he said, "You have to leave. You're depressing me." I had nowhere to go. And out of desperation, I called the phone number there. He was dating a girl that had been in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. She was always nice to me. She had her court card signed in the bar one day. We had a big book under her arm, going to A&A, drunk as a skunk. First time I ever heard about it, saw a big book. You know, they're signing her court card down the bar, Donald Duck. You know, they were saying, "Don't say that." But her number was there because she was dating her. And if that number would have been pushed under a phone book, seconds and inches, I wouldn't be here. And she said she couldn't help me. She was drinking that day. She died at 31 in St. John's Hospital, a wet brain, and didn't know me. They say every alcoholic has a sobriety date. It's either in the rooms or on your tombstone. When I heard that, it was like, killer disease. Killer disease. And I called my mom, collect. And I had my broken jaw. And she and my sister had found me in what hospital I was in and found out I was going to be okay. Because she got a call from someone who didn't tell her what hospital I was in. So my mother didn't sleep at night for those 2 weeks right in there. And my mom got on the phone that morning when I called her collect because I had nowhere to go. It's my sobriety date. Norm used to talk about seconds and inches, and we all have them that we got here. Just how the worm turned that day for us to come here. Just the breadcrumbs to follow to get here. Just the surrender and the willingness to go somewhere where you don't even know you're going with people I didn't know, because my mother said, "Sharon, I can't help you anymore. Go to the Salvation Army. $20, you'd have another speaker." I found out when my mother was 94 years old, because I'm awake and aware now to life, that she put the phone on her chest because she wanted to help me, and my dad was there. And my dad said to her, "We can't help her. We've already tried." So my mother had to get back on the phone. She took the heat for my dad, because she knew if my dad said no, I would have gone, "I'm going to go out there with my broken jaw, my crazy self, and I'm going to hitchhike to Arizona," because Phoenix has drive-through liquor stores. I remember that. She knew how defiant I could be that would light that ember that was left. And she said, "Go to the Salvation Army, Sharon." And I called a number, that girl Chris, that's when I called Chris. So she had me call Suzanne, a stranger, and that's how I ended up at my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And I'm still here. I'm a one-time in person, but as, you know, was said, you know, it's today. And God is today. God is in my heart today. God is in my actions today. God is in my waking up. I have a dog that thinks its name is God in the morning, because I just go, "God, God, 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 God." And she's part Jack Russell, and she jumps around, and she gets up, and, "Yay, God, God, God." And then they look at me like, as I'm trying to meditate, they're looking at me. My cat is feral. I don't ever know what she's going to do. I found her in the street. Yeah. She's getting better like a newcomer. She's getting a lot better, but she's a year old now. But they'd look at me like, "Hurry up, hurry up, we're hungry, we're hungry." Then I figured out, feed them first. You know, I was like, solution. But my dad, the amends, thank God we talked about that. Thank God I put it out there. Thank God Janet was scared the crap out of me, my first sponsor. Long nails. You remember Janet? She had like pink hot pants on and a turquoise tube top. Who still wears tube tops, you know? We used to be in the bar with the striped one on, then the solid one on the bottom. We'd go to the bathroom with somebody, come back, and the ones, they're all reversed. And somebody looked like, tube tops were good access, I got to say. They kind of give me the creeps. So she kind of gave me the creeps with these nails and the hair and the fluorescence and the clip-clopping that she clip-clopped all the time. She said, "Well, my one hip is shorter than the other." But her little fanny would go. But anyway, that was Janet. She scared me. And I knew if I got off the plane, had done my amends to my father. And the way I have to lead into this, because she knew everything, I put it there. I put it there. I put it that, you know, all of that, that I'm not enough. And I'll never be able to be enough to my dad. We danced polka. He played the accordion. I played the accordion just so that he would see that hay wagon coming around the corner, and we'd be playing Lady of Spain as I'm sitting on the hay with poking through my butt with my hangover on Bodica accordion band, and it's sauerkraut days in Lisbon, Iowa, so everybody's on the street, and there's a big parade, and here comes the Bodica accordion band, and Sharon's playing Lady of Spain, and hungover, and bell is shaking, and oh my God, but my dad will be in the next block around the corner. And he will elbow his buddy and go, "That's my girl." I knew that would never happen again, ever. He knew way too much about me. He saw me in too many situations. But I did, because she helped me write something for him. And as I said it, going back to the airport, leaning against a car that was warm from the Indian summer, Iowa, I was a little over 1 year sober. Nobody looked at each other. The car was warm on my back. It was sitting on sand. I remember making holes in the sand with my toes, not looking at him, saying what I had to say. 2 hours before my plane took off, or she would have sent me back. I know her, right? And he just said, "I always wanted you to be happy." And that was it. That was the start, as my second sponsor said. Well, that was a good start. So my dad walked me down the aisle when I was 2 years sober, and somebody took a picture, and we were face to face. We were eye to eye. Fabulous photo for a time I can remember since I was maybe 18, 17, that we were eye to eye. And you've done that for me. You've healed that with me. We don't do these things alone. It's a we program, first word and first step. And I had to find a God deeper than my Beacon's moving van, because Debbie sent me a picture last week. Beacon's moving van. I get them from all over the world now. People, not the world, but in the states where they are. And someone will take a picture and go, "Think of you today, Beacon's moving van," because she said, "You better get your own God or you're going to get drunk." And that was as I was trying to do my fourth step. And we had done the third step, and after we were done, and she hugged me and wouldn't stop, and I wanted to hit her, and then it would have been all over the Saturday night meeting that she's hugging me, and I hit her, and, oh, that Sharon, she should just go back to Iowa or somewhere. And I felt so bad about myself, but I didn't hit her. I just stood there, and then I felt really good. Something about her hugging me after that third step. And my first thought was, because I was jumbled, there was no sparks going in the computer in many places, was, "Oh my God, I think I'm gay, I'm in love with my sponsor." And she said, "Let's not make any major decisions in our first year." So my dad came, walked me down the aisle, and thank God those amends were made, because it kept growing and growing. And my second sponsor, Jenny, after my inventory, she said, "Well, I think you have a better job now. I think you can pay your father back the money you owe him." "I'm sorry I put that down on the paper, you know?" "He doesn't need it." But out of that inventory came forgiveness. And I called my dad and asked him if I could pay him back the money I owe him, because she said, "Do it." And he had read the big book. He had bought one when he came to my wedding. He went to the literature table. You all gave him one. He read it all, and he saw where most alcoholics owe money, and ran a calculator tape and put it in the big book. So when I called him, he said, "Oh, it's this much." It's like, it was way too high, according to my calculations. Way too high. He had time to look at the dossier, and my brother said it was very thick. I saw it on Dad's desk. "Your dossier was very thick." And so she said, "Okay, well then, you know, call him back with payment terms." And he accepted, and I called her and said, "Oh, he accepted." She said, "Good. This is what sponsors do that pay attention. The people we go to, choose carefully. Choose somebody that's not going to freak them out." I've made amends to the Catholic Church because I sponsor a nun. I know. Yeah, right? You talking to me, nun? You're asking me to sponsor you? What? Okay. So I made my amends. But I had gone to a priest at one point and sat with him face to face, and he was a little blown away. Okay, five Hail Marys. This is the one I always got. I always got five Hail Marys. Oh, Sam, I knew I was going out that night to drink with the boys from Iowa City. Always five Hail Marys. So I took it to Janet, and then I took it to Ginny. And Ginny had me call my dad back. She said, are you willing to grow through this with your father? What? Sponsors have the, between me and me is my sponsor, air. Between me and me is me. I need a perspective. I need the air between, I need the experience you guys have had. When I come sit with you, this makes sense to me. It's one of the few places I've had a dark night of the soul year, I got to tell you. Really hard. More layers. The fire is burning inside toward everything, toward more of God's love. And it hurts the burning, but it's necessary to shed the skin. And I know at the end of the dark night of the soul year I'm having or whatever it is, there will be a new view that I've never had before because I'm a seeker. And sometimes you gotta get burned. So my sponsor said that. So she said, I want you to put a note with that check to your father. Don't send the cold hard cash alone. What? My dad. Men's older sister. You know, come on. Let me tell you the family. I don't care. Tell them about your life. So I did that for almost 5 years. From a little sticky on the check to I wrote a letter, one page. Didn't realize that I had not thought about what I was writing to him until I got to the bottom of the page because it had little turtles along the bottom. I went, oh, I just wrote my dad a letter without thinking about it. I used to stand over Father's Day cards and sweat. Oh, no, that's, oh, it was almost good. I almost got one, and then the ending. It's like an hour for Father's Day cards. And what happened with that, my dad got the check on the note, and the check on the note, and she said, Bill and Bob are watching. So, okay, Bill and Bob are watching. And my dad called me the day after Christmas, almost 5 years in, and he said, Merry Christmas, Sharon. I don't want your notes anymore. You're free and clear of the checks. I mean, I don't want your checks anymore. Please stop. Please send me your notes. So it was such a day. He said, I don't want your money anymore, but please send me your notes. That's the exact words. I want to always remember that. Vince Wise said, Sharon, always tell that story. I don't care what you're at the podium for. And there was forgiveness there. There was healing there. And because of a sponsor that was so wise that said it's time for financial amends and I could grow through this with my dad, I was home. My son was born. I was picking him up. I used to send my son home to Iowa. I was divorced. So I'd go see Grandpa and Grandma. Go learn how to weed a patch, use a hammer, drive a golf cart, take swimming lessons. You know, Grandma makes great macaroni and cheese and vanilla milkshakes, you know. And so, and then he was 15, and my mother said, I don't think you need to send him anymore. But he has great memories of that. I got to send him home, and I was picking him up to come back, and I visited them. And my dad and I went to town. You go to town, Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Bigger town than the one I lived in, but we went to a hardware store, we got some things, and we were coming back. It was a hot August day, and my dad said, do you want a root beer? There's a root beer stand. I said, sure, we'll have a root beer. And I go get my root beer, I'm walking back to the car, and my dad said, no, let's go sit under the tree. There's a picnic table. So we went and sat under the tree on a picnic table and drank our root beers on a hot August day in Iowa. And we just talked. And I swear I was swinging my legs like a little girl sitting across from my daddy. The innocence came back because of a sponsor that wanted more for me than I wanted for myself or thought I could have. She lifted me up into forgiveness and innocence. And my father was able to help me when I went through a messy divorce. By being dad, my car died. So Dad went to town. He found a Ford Galaxy four-door, 7,000 miles on it. He called me but 2 days after I told him. I called him every Sunday night. The car died. It was your son in the car? Yes. Are you okay? Yes. Everything's okay. He was the little guy then. And my dad called and said, your mother and I were at the bank, and we found a car because the banker had an extra car, and we're driving it out from Iowa, so you'll have a car. My dad had the freedom to be my father as I was going through a very hard, messy divorce at 10 years of sobriety. And at 10 years of sobriety, my sponsor got off a plane with 21 days instead of 21 years. I would have had Ginny to the end of her life, which is, she got sober again. She had 11 years when she died. And I was very scared, and I was in this group called the Pacific Group. It was my first meeting. I stayed there. I'm a runner. I don't know why I'm still here, but, you know, I sit with people I know and love. It's my home. It's where I go to exhale. It's where I go to remember there's hope. I forget there's hope sometimes. And my dad got to drive my car out to me. There was nothing there, but he wanted to be my dad. And he got to be because of the amends were done. He didn't have to say to my mother, who was holding the phone, "No, we've tried. We were on a new spiritual level of living." And I ended up at Clancy's door that year with my son in a stroller. He wasn't crying. I'm sobbing because I just picked up Ginny at the international airport and drove her home, and she told me she had 21 days. She had been smoking pot in Paris because they said, "Oh, it's okay. You can take a cake, Ginny." But blessedly, Seconds and Inches, Father Terry was in Rome, went over to see Ginny in Paris and said, "Ginny, come home." Because that's what we do for each other when the call is out there. God, I love 12-step calls. I had so many wonderful 12-step calls. I married a B. My first husband was a B, and they used to have a Rolodex at central office. So maybe the A's won't, but then they get to the B's, and we had a lot of 12-step calls as B's. Last name starting with a B, and all by the airport and seedy motels and women that are beat up and like, yes, come on. Who I know would come out of their blackouts the next morning with all this literature. But I stayed sober. And, I walked into Clancy's house sobbing with my son in the stroller, and we sat down in front of the fireplace, and he said, "I heard about Ginny. I'm sorry," because he sponsored Ginny. He knew that she was my sponsor. I said, "I need a sponsor. Al left me. He's with the newcomer, Jill, and they're in the rooms, and I'm betrayed, and I hate everybody, and I don't know what to do, and I've already got my passports for me and my son. We're leaving, but I need a sponsor." And he said, "We'll try. We'll try." And we've been trying for 44 years. And he is louder than my head. A month ago, I was sitting at the meeting talking about this entrepreneurial thing I'm trying to do and all the problems I was having. He just looked at me and he said, "Because you're defiant." I thought, "Oh, I hate you. You still have me." "Because you're defiant. Oh, you're right. Oh, no, I'm going to get up now and leave." It's like, God, he can just still pinpoint me. Because between me and him is air. Between me as me is, "I'm not enough, I can't do this, I'm not confident. They let me go from the law firm after almost 16 years, they eliminated my position. What does that mean? I'm happy, happy, happy," because I was in hypertension in my life for 2 years. Too many jobs, too much greed, too much personalities, no support, and I would go to work at 8 in the morning, go to a meeting, go back to work till midnight. I'm exempt, I gave it. I can't be mad at them. I gave it. And it's kind of ageism or whatever it is. They had to buy me out. I got, you know, unemployment first time in my whole life ever. And I had to recreate myself. But first I learned to sleep. Because I was waking up every 2 hours with my heart in my throat. And physically I was sick. Physically I was getting sick. And God, I used to look at people and go, "You guys know where the defibrillator is, don't you?" And they would look at me like, "Ugh." I said, "I'm kidding, but not really." It never got my humor. Those law firms, I was 3 years with legal, they never got my humor. They go, "Oh, you, please don't tell that dark joke again. Please don't tell it dark." So my dark night of the soul, my sponsor still can pinpoint me here. I'm recreating myself. I don't really, and it's bringing up grief and all kinds of things. My dad was killed in 99. We were good. AA was already in my mother's house in Iowa, already there when I got off the plane. My husband got melanoma. My second husband, Casey, my only real husband, my soulmate, met him in the rooms. Many of you knew him. 1 year, 1 month, and 14 days after I was divorced. But who's counting? And I started dating this man, and I told my sponsor, who I was dating, he knew him, he's in our group, and he said to me, well, go slow, which means don't sleep with him yet, you know, but he's... So I'm going slow, and I'm listening to my sponsor. I am listening to my sponsor. And then my new future husband said, do you want to go up to Santa Barbara tonight and maybe stay over? And we're like 20 days into 30, right? I think I had a 30-day deadline. Or lifeline, whatever you want to call it. But I went up to him after the yard where I was playing volleyball, and they were all playing volleyball, and everybody was leaving. I'm waiting because I'm going to ask. I have to go ask Dad if I can go. You know, it was like, what a moment. Because my dad's gone. I mean, he's not there. And so Clancy kind of became a surrogate in many, many ways for me. Many, many ways for me. And I went over, and he was on the court, and he had his, you know, arms on his hips, and he's looking at me, and I'm looking at him, and then we both look down, because I think he knows it's coming. So we both look down. And I said to him, oh, Casey got us a little room in Santa Barbara, and I wanted to go up there with him tonight. What do you think? You know, kind of in that voice, right? And he kicked some sand on my shoes, and he said, all right, go on then. But because I had done my sex inventory, because I had shaped my ideal, and my sponsor said, what can you bring? I had to write out what I could bring, not what I want or my ideal. What am I capable of bringing? So much so that my Casey got some of the best of me. I mean, I remember one night that I was complaining about something, cooking dinner. He thought I could only cook three things for a long time. I really, truly, I was like, oh, I don't cook, but I can cook. And then he would say, oh, you can cook. I was like, oh, crap. Blew my cover. So I'm cooking in the kitchen, and maybe I'm mad about having to do something other than spaghetti, you know, and I'm complaining about something, and he's sitting in the other room, and I can't see him, and I'm coming out to set the table, and he's not there. I look outside, his car's gone. What? And then, yeah, I call him, he's not home yet. And I call him later, and he picks up the phone. I said, you didn't stay for dinner. He said, well, you know, it was getting kind of negative around there. I'd just rather be home reading a book tonight. But we're not breaking up. Don't worry, I'll call you tomorrow. Because that was my fear, and he knew. What a man he was. And the healing that happened with my family, I want to let you know. I was in the van with my family one day, all of them, in Iowa. Now, I really was from Wisconsin when I was out there drinking because it had cheese. Iowa had pigs and corn, and that's the way I felt about myself. I would be in a bar, and I would be Cindy Lou from Wisconsin. And or something, anybody but Sharon from Iowa, Sharon Kay from Iowa. Even today at Starbucks, I'll give a phony neighbor once in a while just for fun, you know, and then they'll be calling my name going, Cindy Lou, who's Cindy Lou? Oh, right here. That's how bad I get. So I was in the van with my family. It was my sister's wedding. Is somebody okay? Okay. Oh, it's just coffee. Are you okay, honey? Good. We got a yeah. All right. That's good. So we were in the van, my sister's wedding. They picked me up at the airport. I was on a night flight. I'm tired. There's a lot going on with the family. I'm sitting in the middle. My sister's in the front seat talking to my dad about finance because she's a master at that. Retired at 50, travels the world, master at that, investment banker. My brother's in the back talking about fishing with his new brother-in-law because he's a commercial fisherman in Alaska. And I'm thinking, come on, Miles, I taught you how to put a worm on a hook. Bring me into this conversation, is what I'm thinking. And then my sister, the one getting married, talking to my mother about clothing or gifts. I said, I want to get up, stand up, go, look at Fashionista LA, come on, you know, ask my opinion on something. And then I realized nobody's talking to me. I'm in the middle of the van and I'm having a cathartic crying episode going, because I don't fit in. That's it. See, I knew it. It's the truth. And my dad stopped the van on Cedar River Road, turned around and looked at me and he said, are you okay?
Oh.
You want to hear how I'm not okay here? I have a soapbox. It's in my purse. It folds down just for moments like this. But for some reason that day, I had done my prayer and meditation as I was waiting to connect on that morning flight back home from Chicago. And I heard a voice that was loud enough for me to hear. It said, get out of the van. So we were stopped, and I just said, yeah, I'm just a little tired. And I got out of the van, and my dad handed me some water. And then they went back to their conversations, like I just didn't have this huge moment here. And that I kept my mouth shut, and I didn't talk about it. I didn't tell them all what I thought about them and how I don't fit in. And I was standing outside, and it was a morning, and it was beautiful, and it was corn had yellow on it. The corn was beautiful. Just fields of corn. I thought, oh, God, corn, 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 corn. I used to get lost in cornfields. And I looked, and there was light above the yellow. And in that little bit of light, there was life. I could see things floating around in that light. And as I looked in the distance, I could see some beautiful trees and the green and the hills and the blue sky. And I just thought, you know what? Iowa's kind of pretty. And there was something inside of me that went, it's okay to be from Iowa. It's okay to be with this family. And I got back in the van and I kept my mouth shut. Because I had that awareness. Because I'm standing with you on the broad highway. Because I've heard your experience. I know what happens here if we do the work. I know what happens here if I can be patient and tolerant and have a huge God. It's not just Beacons anymore. Beacons came up because Janet pissed me off. And she just said, you know, where's your higher power in all this? Who's, you know, what's your higher power? I was talking to newcomers, and she just stood there and listened to my, what she thought was no higher power, and they're talking to newcomers, and she said, you better get your own higher power. You're going to get drunk. And I just thought, God, I'm talking to newcomers here. And I looked across the street, and she made me mad enough that I was a Beacons moving van. I had a moment. I said, okay, Beacons moving van's my higher power. How's that, Janet? Fine, as long as it's not you. And it doesn't, it's not spelled like a beacon of light, B-E-K-I-N-S, but all the newcomers were getting it. Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. And you know, we made it here. Newcomer, we're in those quilty blankets. God came to AA, came to the front of the meeting, rolled out that little, you know, ramp and pulled down all these things in quilty blankets because we're safe now. Yeah, we're a little scarred and scratched and broken, but it's okay. So, Beacons, get it? Oh, yeah, we all got it. You know, it's... And because I sponsored that nun and I used to sit in church and my son got kicked out of Lutheran school and then they have us carnival at the school and that was some more amends. I got to make amends at the carnival for ripping off little kids and not giving them teddy bears because I'm drinking tequila and I don't care. I don't care. That's why I kind of got busted in Bogalusa. But I'll close this. I read again this morning something that I like to read. It's about a master and a whiny. You know, I have a dog that loves me and I walk open the door. Dog, 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 dog. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're home. You're home. That's me and God. God just opened the door to God. He's excited. He's excited. He's excited. You go away. You go down the hall. Talk to somebody. Come back. Open the door. Yeah, you're home. You're home. You're home. God, come sit with me. And that's the way my God is. And then I have a cat. Lowers her ears and thinks, okay, can't open her home, good. And she's getting a little friendlier, so she'll kind of come around my legs and make her little whiny noise because she wants something. And I looked at one and I said, oh my God, that's me and God going, wine, wine, wine. Can I have? Do I want? Please, please. Well, I'll rub on you. I'll pretend like I like you. I need this, God. And God's just looking at me, honey, I've already taken care of you. Get out of yourself, you know? Never boots me away, lets me whine. And I got to find forgiveness and healing and innocence. And God with skin on sitting right here today. I need God with skin on. My heart's been broken open. I held my mother in her last days at 95 years old. At 94, she was telling somebody, I wanted to finish this story. She was telling somebody that there was only one time that her husband said to her that we can't help one of our children. My ears perked up. So I talked to my mom about that day, August 20th, 1975, when she said, no, I can't help you anymore. Go to the Salvation Army. I thought it came from my mom. It came from my dad. She told me that story. I freed her from that. At 95, she was in hospice 2.5 days. I held her. She said to me the night before, when everybody left her mom, get me out of here. Because she knew I would. She knew I would. My husband went. His son went with stomach cancer. His cat went a couple years ago. It was the last living thing of him. And I still grieve for him. My broken open hearts heal bigger. You guys have, with 4 and 5, brought me closer to my God, to thank my God and let him love me in my heart. And I am worth it, and I know that because I'm here. God has a lot for me to do. Page 77, our real purpose that shows up right after, almost right after a minute, 2 pages later, and at step 5. And I've looked for my real purpose on a lot of things in life. I'm a seeker. But my real purpose on page 77 is to fit ourselves. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves. It takes work, staying fit, spiritually, mentally, physically, to be of maximum service, not minimum. Say yes when it's inconvenient. Show up when it's hard. To God, first of all, and the people about us. And Chuck used to say, it rains on the just and the unjust. I think we all get grace. I think everybody gets grace. The whole world gets grace. It's just some people have that big black umbrella they put up. It says, no grace, written in white paint on the top. I don't want any grace. And they're standing around under their black umbrella. It's no grace. I like my life like it is. You know? But all we have to do in Alcoholics Anonymous is put our hand out, and you guys will take us out from that black umbrella and give us some more grace. I love Blake. He's a mystic. He's very intense. But he told this story he wrote in some of his writing that I just hung on to. He was in India. It was late 1800s. He was in India. And he was sitting on the Ganges River, and there were these boats on fire going down the river. And he thought, what is going on? There's another one. Ganges is very wide. Actually, some of my husband's ashes have been blessed in the river. He's gone everywhere. I have so much more of him. I have 100 places I've taken him. I've documented them all where still the love story continues. But he saw these boats on fire, and so a local came by and said, what's going on? These boats are on fire. He said, it's the day we honor our dead. We wrap them. The people that have died in recently, we wrap them in linen. We put them in the boat with everything they love, their food, their flowers, their readings, what they loved. We light the boat on fire, and we push them down the Ganges. That's our final resting place. And he sat there for a long time after he heard that, and he looked at all the boats on fire, and he said to himself, I had this thought that came from somewhere else, and he heard it. And it said, when you throw me on the pyre of life, and I'm all done, and I have all the things I love here, and you light me up, and you push me down the river, may I be all used up. Thanks for having me.